It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 454. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's all one word, Mike Tech Show on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. Send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/miketechshow. And don't forget the wiki over at mtswiki.com. There you'll see links to all of the old shows and links to the audio and show notes. It's a great resource. Check that out. And again, that's mtswiki.com. I got a jam-packed show with a ton of stories and some tips that I want to get right into talking about. No sponsor tonight. The first, you hear me speak about retainer clients, and that's a client that prepays me quarterly for support. And there's a great story here. It actually took place a couple times. I have a client that I've been working with for the last couple years, and I've been trying to get him to convert to a retainer status where he pays in advance. And he couldn't understand. And I said, John, the reason you don't understand is because I've been jumping the minute you call me, but that's not always the case. I prioritize my response based on who has prepaid me. If two people call me and one's a retainer and one isn't, I'm going to get back to the retainer first. So it sort of puts you in a priority queue for helping, especially if there's an emergency. Well, Saturday before Easter, and I was pretty busy. I was helping out here at home, and I get a text from my client. He's now a retainer client, and he just became a retainer last month. And he has an emergency in his office where his business is all about the ability to be able to scan lots and lots of documents back to the server, and his big scanner copier stopped communicating with the server. And this was huge, and it's in the middle of the day on a Saturday, and he calls me, he texts me. I call him right back. I said, I'm logging in right now. I know exactly what's wrong. I'll have you up and running in 5 minutes. I did that. Bang. He's working. And he's like, Mike, that was so impressive. And I said, that's because you're a retainer. I see your text. I know this is an emergency by the way you described it. Because you're a retainer client, I drop what I'm doing, no matter what it is, and I come to your assistance and I help you. So now let's fast forward a couple weeks. And I'm at the Green Day concert last week. And it's in between the opening act and Green Day. He has another email problem. And I'm texting him what the possible scenarios are. He is receiving email but cannot send. Nobody can send. So there's only a few things that can be wrong. And I type him in my iPhone. I text him all the options. And we solve this. And I tell him, I am at a concert in between bands, and I was able to respond. That's the kind of service and that's the kind of response I'll get. He is now sold. He's like an apostle out there for me in referring me business because of these two incidents where he's now sold on the whole idea of being a retainer client. And I wanted to explain that because now this is a real life story of how this client benefited and gets it now. He understands. And as long as he's in business and as long as I'm in business, he will be a retainer for life. And that's what I try to build with my clients. And that's why I'm sharing these stories. That's one. Here's an interesting one. You often in the past heard me speak about orthodontist client that's 100% MAC. Something is happening that is very interesting. They have this gorgeous office with iMacs all over the place. To get a little, I guess, technical within their industry, Invisalign is a type of braces that they fit to the teeth and they're invisible. And it's kind of newer technology instead of using those old-fashioned metal braces that they have to attach to your teeth. And he's a huge Invisalign, I guess, installer, you know, if you're an orthodontist. Here's what's happening with Invisalign. If you want to show the patient and you want to show the video of after they take a mold of your mouth and they want to show you how your teeth are going to improve, and it's like a little animation, a little video, they cannot grab that on a Mac. They have to have a PC. They have to have Internet Explorer with this add-in to be able to get that video that they could then send to a client, a patient, or have it on record. I had to install this past week VMware Fusion on 4 of the iMacs and then put Windows 7 on each one. So we had to get a Windows 7 license. We had to get VMware Fusion and literally put it on all of the iMacs. I'm there installing it on the last one. And what happens? One of the girls in the office tells me the bank came out. They want to be able to do an automatic scan of any checks that they get from patients. So for an automatic deposit, like electronic deposit, so you don't have to go to the bank and physically bring the check. This scanner does not work. So now we're going to try it with connecting to an iMac VMware Fusion. But if it doesn't, he's going to have to buy a Windows laptop. We're having this conversation with the main doctor who set this all up for his practice. And great guy. And just, I love supporting his office. And he's like, Mike, I feel like we're going backwards here. It's amazing where we have all of this beautiful iMacs. Everything's great. His main software is all Mac-based. He has a Mac server. And now here comes Windows invading the network because the corporate world out there, and it's amazing, still holds on to PCs. In the chat was mentioned Parallels. That's another option for the Mac. I do not like Parallels. Now, I got to admit, the last two versions I have not used. But when I was doing a bake-off between VMware Fusion and Parallels, when it came time for myself a couple years ago, VMware Fusion just ate up Parallels and spit it out in terms of performance, in terms of what I could do with networking. It was not even a fair race, according to me, when I was working on Parallels and VMware Fusion. So I'm a VMware Fusion guy because of that. Now, Parallels must have made some improvements and done some things, but I've tried them both, and I'm just very, very big on VMware Fusion. It's what I'm familiar with. Now, we got all that done, and it's just an interesting story how I've seen an uptick of lots of Macs in business, but we still got banks with electronic deposits not supporting Mac. A company like Invisalign, a huge company like that, not embracing Mac. So we still got a lot of big companies out there not embracing it. It's hard to be 100% Mac in this day and age. And that's just an interesting observation I wanted to share. This is in response sort of to some emails during the week that I've gotten and some follow-ups that I want to talk about. Last week, I mentioned the story where I had to go through and uninstall all the HP software. Right after the show, Peter sent me an email with two PDFs that were put together by HP for how to scrub the HP software and the step-by-step on removing HP printer software. Love it. Those two PDFs for the instructions, I will upload to my website and link them in the show notes for this show. Peter, thank you very much for that. Kate sent me a utility, and this is from fantasticfreeware.com, called Stalled Printer Repair. What a cool little utility that if you run into someone with a printer problem, you got this little utility, standalone utility that you can run that you can click and it will clean out the printer spool. Love it. Great little utility. Kate, thanks for that. I've been talking back and forth with Colin from the UK about encrypted email. And we touched on this last week a little bit. And I'm only going to go just a little further because I'm still in the midst of this implementation and I don't have all of the details yet, but I will describe the following. For financial advisors, if they want to share information with their clients, the email has to be encrypted. But here's what's happening now. What companies are doing, they're sending an email to the client saying an encrypted email is waiting for you, but on a special portal service that you have to log into. And they've previously given them instructions on how to log in, how to select and set a secure password. That's I'm seeing as the future. So I'm working with my client and their broker dealer who recommended the service called Smarsh, SMARSH.com. Smarsh is a company that provides that encrypted portal service. So if you're involved in any of this, check that out. And I sent that link to Colin because he is in the middle of supporting doing exactly what I'm doing for financial advisors. That's a service that is certified, that is FINRA compliant, that provides this for financial planners, financial advisors. 99.com last night had a laptop that I was working on for a client, and I had to rip and replace, and they had Vista, but I upsold them to Windows 7 because I tried desperately not to reinstall Vista when possible. So backed up all the data using Fabs Auto Backup for Tech. Beautiful. The system needed to be redone because it kept blue screening, but there was no hardware problem. I already tested the hard drive. I tested the memory, tested the video. The hardware came out perfect. There was something corrupt within Windows Vista. I was up long enough without crashing to be able to back everything up with Fabs Auto Backups. That was great. So once I got all the data and all the settings, I blew it away and I installed Windows 7. No problem. Every driver was found. This was a Toshiba satellite laptop. Now I go to 99. That's my favorite site to get all of the Flash and Java and Microsoft Security Essentials and Adobe Reader and everything. And Flash is no longer there. And Kevin, Reliant in the chat, mentioned this right in the pre-show. He says, Flash is gone from 99. I said, I know, I'm going to talk about this. I'm wondering, Flash, when you installed it from 99, I think the Ask toolbar was automatically built in there. I know I never approve it. And I had a client where I installed Flash, and they did not have the Ask toolbar, and I used 99. And after I was done, the Ask toolbar was installed. I'm wondering if because of that, did 99 get complaints? Are they having a problem because Adobe will not let them uncheck that? And so they dropped it from Nynite. So if you want Flash, you got to manually go back to Adobe and update your Flash. So it's not on Nynite. It's just my thinking on what Nynite might have done. Let's keep an eye on that. But that's just an extra step now. I like everything being at one website like that. I check everything I want, get the little downloader, and then it just installs and everything's great. An interesting Google Apps story that I must share with you, and I solved a major problem for one of my clients last night. This client, I moved them from their hosted email service where they only had a couple email accounts that they were having lots of problems and outages with the email. And this was when Google Apps was free. And I moved them, and I'll never forget because it was the day after Thanksgiving. It was Black Friday because that was the best day to make this transition for them. So I moved them to Google Apps, and everything was okay for a month. Now, they have one main account that they use for all their orders and all their business. This is a printing company where they live and die by their email, and it's how clients send proofs, and just lots of email. They're very dependent on it. They have four people that share that same account. When they got new computers, two of the owners, who never really used the email on their own, they would always go to this sort of shared workstation to look at the email, now have their own email. I now have four people using Thunderbird, IMAP, pounding away at their Google Apps account, this one account. Well, over the last couple weeks, we've been trying to figure out what's going on, complaining about all of a sudden they get no inbound email for a couple hours. It's slow. They get little circles spinning where it can't connect. I was trying everything. I was like, boy, it can't be a Thunderbird problem. And to happen on four different computers at the same time, this was driving me crazy. So last night we decided, and I said, you know, it's got to be a security issue now where four accounts, Gmail seeing them access it at the same time. So they must be going crazy saying, no, you're not allowed to do this. And it's restricting the access, because I even noticed they were prompted that they had to re-enter the password. It was a nightmare. And last night, I was creating a new account for another user, and I had the great idea of let's keep one system just accessing this one account. Let's make sure we have accounts for all the three other people, and we'll forward the email because everybody has to see all the email. It's a long story, but this is how they have to operate for their workflow. I'll just forward all the email to those three accounts. The minute I log in that main account, I see the account was suspended for 3 hours due to exceeding the bandwidth limit for POP and IMAP. I did not know this, and this is the point of the story, and I got an important link that I'm going to put out there from Google that describes the limits on bandwidth when you're accessing your email. They were exceeding the bandwidth by having these four systems use IMAP and constantly pounding away for doing their updates. So here's what I did last night. I took the three accounts, set them up only for IMAP by themselves. They already had the two. So instead of now being looking at two accounts, they're only looking at their own individual account, not this shared account. The shared account is only this one user using it. So we only got one system per email account. Now, there's one other station that's very important. And something else I learned within Google Apps, you can only forward to one email address. You are not allowed to forward to multiple email addresses. So I forward it to this one other email. Now, what if someone wants to look at the email for this big shared account? You're allowed to just use webmail. and just go regular gmail.com and log in. So I put a little link for a shortcut for the three users to check on that one account when they want to. Today, I called in. How are things going this morning? After this was all set up remotely last night, it's beautiful. Everything is working perfectly. So this is why I wanted to mention this, because I did not realize that Gmail and Google imposes a bandwidth restriction. And you're going to see what those restrictions are with the link that I have in the show notes. Received an email from a listener who's starting his career out in IT, and he's asking, should he get his A+ or Net Plus certifications? It's a tough question. I can't answer that. As a matter of fact, no one can answer that for you. There's nothing better than another. It's like I can't say, well, become a DBA because that's better. You may hate that. There's so many areas of IT. You know, database administrator, network administrator, just doing desktop support, network infrastructure support, web support, security, a Cisco engineer from networking. There are so many disciplines, so many areas. You have to explore and see what you're interested in. What is your passion? What do you like doing? And what you want to do is Google these certifications, see what it's about and what it's going to give you, and then honestly look at that and say, is that what I like doing? Is that going to make me better? Am I going to enjoy doing this? I'm going to make a strange kind of parallel here. When I started college at Drexel, I entered in chemical engineering. Now, halfway through that curriculum, sophomore year, they have a class to sort of weed you out whether you should be a chemical engineer or not. And I was doing okay in the curriculum. That wasn't the problem. The problem was I wasn't enjoying it. I didn't like it. And I looked at myself when I was in this class and said, is this what I want to do for the rest of my life? And I asked myself that, and I answered, no, I don't like it. I loved math and calculus, and I loved chemistry, but I didn't like what a chemical engineer would be. So you got to take a look at all of what is involved with each of these certifications or even the classes that you might be taking. And you have to ask, do you want to do this? Are you going to like this? Now it becomes, do you just want the certification just to have the letters to show you're certified? Well, you may want to do that just to have that. It's like the old MCSE, you know, from Microsoft. A lot of employers required it, but I'll tell you, the techs that I hired weren't MCSEs, you know, because they were better than a lot of people that I interviewed that had an MCSE. And let me tell you, the people that I hired could run circles around them on solving problems because they just had a piece of paper. And I could tell they really didn't like it. They had no passion for what they were doing. It was just a job. It wasn't a career. You have to show passion and you got to love what you're doing. So that's how I answer certifications questions. And I make you take the finger and come back at yourself and answer the hard questions. Is this what you like? Do you see yourself doing this for the rest of your life? Unfortunately, I can't answer this in terms of, no one can, in terms of what you should be doing. We can advise you on a path, like if you say, I want to become a Cisco certified engineer. No problem. I'll tell you what you should be doing, where you should be studying, the course books you should be looking at, the classes you should be taking, the tests you should be taking for certification. but you've already made a decision that that's what you want to be. When you step back and say, okay, which path am I going to take? Nobody can answer that for you. And that's where it becomes very hard. I can describe each of those paths, and then you decide. But you got to make that decision. Quick reminder on email. Received an email from a listener that needed some help on troubleshooting a client's Outlook, where they were not able to send messages. So the first thing I said is, check all the port numbers. And if you're using Gmail, make sure you, if especially if you're in Outlook, I like port 587, and for the encryption, TLS. Use 587 and TLS if it's Gmail. Make sure the tab for outgoing servers is checked to log in for sending mail. And then the biggest thing to absolutely check, make sure at the general setup that the login and password are correct. And the login has to be the fully qualified email address and the password. So how do you know the password? Well, and this happens all the time with my clients with Comcast. I go to the Comcast website or whoever is hosting their email. There's probably a website. See that you can successfully log in. Then you know you got their password. If you don't have their password working there, well, it's not going to work in any email client. So just a couple steps that I wanted to go over because they're helpful when you're troubleshooting and diagnosing, hey, why can't I send, or for that matter, why can't I receive email? Now, since we don't have a sponsor, I am going to take a moment here and mention first a huge thank you to everybody using my link this month. You are really pounding away using my Amazon link, and I really appreciate it. And that link is amazon.mikenation.net. Thank you so much for your continued use of that. And if you haven't used it, please, when you're purchasing from Amazon, use that link. It's a big help. And share it, bookmark it. That's amazon.mikenation.net. A small commission comes back to the Mike Tech Show. Your price is the same, and it helps support my efforts, like purchasing a new mixer. So thank you so much. This email is from Nancy. A little over a year ago, I joined the team supporting a military arm. I had come from the private sector, a small to medium business, where we were free to do pretty much as we wanted, as long as it was not illegal and served the customers. I knew coming here would be very different because I had served in the military long ago. The differences are both good and bad. Security. Security is extremely tight, and we have a few infections and almost no intrusions, although not for lack of trying. Regardless of how good your defenses are, the users can still get tricked. We don't even clean infections. We back up the data, re-image, scan the data, and reload. We have a dedicated team that strictly works security incidents, and they provide the tools for collection and analysis. We operate under their direction. If a system is compromised, they call us and we follow instructions. We return the machine to service only when they clear it. We still have a number of XP machines that must be off the network by the end of September. And when we are re-imaging a machine after a virus incident, if the machine can run Windows 7, it gets it. Hey, that's a pretty good policy. A lot of users have resisted the upgrade because they don't like 7. But after an incident, their option is removed. They don't like 7. Share Vista or Windows 8. That'll make them come crying back to 7. I'm only joking. Encryption. We use a whole disk encryption program from Trend Micro. I know you preach backups, but here's something I don't recall hearing you say. If you use an encryption program, your backups are even more critical. You will not be able to externally connect your encrypted hard drive to view the data. I have talked about that. That is the whole point of encryption. Some encryption programs are better than others, and letting you decrypt a drive from another system that has the same program on it, but for the most part, it is not something you should count on. Oh, absolutely. And I've run into that with my financial advisors. And semantic endpoint encryption for whole disk encryption is what I run into often. And when they have a hardware problem, you know, that's it. If we can't boot into it, I can't take that drive out and do anything with it. So backups are very critical. We have successfully put an encrypted drive in an identical machine with the motherboard when the motherboard has failed, and we have had mixed results, mostly bad. Decrypting an externally connected drive, and that I have ran into. Additionally, sometimes when the Windows startup process experiences issues, you can't use the Windows startup repair from that point, but the encryption program has a startup repair tool. It requires that the disk be decrypted first, which is incredibly time-consuming. Oh, and forget about using Hyrin or the Ultimate Boot CD of an encrypted disk. If you can't get past the layer of encryption, you won't have any possibility of working with the operating system or files. We experience quite a number of issues that are unlikely to be encountered by a small business level sole proprietor tech support person, like issues with CACs. Most small businesses don't use CAC. Every time someone gets a new CAC, there are a number of steps to get Windows to recognize and use the certificates embedded on the chip. Then to get the certs into Exchange. Then to recover the old certificates. You may see that in a bank or large-scale enterprise, but the process to implement and manage the cards is cumbersome and just not worth it for small operation. We have one person whose job is to issue new and replacement CACs, and there are a lot of programs that are driven by CAC authorization. So when there is an issue with that, it generally dominoes. But the good thing is that one thing usually fixes all the issues. The default browser is IE, and we can use Firefox. Chrome is not permitted except for developers of public-facing websites. Every so often, I'll find a website blocked, and there is usually an explanation available, but it is not as locked down as I thought it would be. There was a guy who got tricked into clicking a porn link, and he went into a panic. We are required to continue our education and training. If we don't, we will lose our admin access. I like that. That's a great policy to make sure and encourage and develop support and for continuing your education. It's something I always encouraged and mentored with anybody working for me. That can cause so many problems that it isn't tolerated for long for not going to the education. There are a lot of things on your podcast that are not particularly relevant to the job I'm doing now, but I still find value in it because your troubleshooting technique is excellent, and I will still be doing repairs and cleanups on my own time. I just got promoted to system administrator. Congratulations. But having spent a year as PC support specialist, I am having to brush back up on networking while studying for Security Plus certifications. I need to get that soon if I want to keep the promotion. I hope I provided something interesting, even not particularly useful to your listeners, Nancy. Nancy, thank you for sharing that, and good luck, and make sure you get certified. If you enjoy that position and you're going to get certified for security, that is awesome, and suck it up. Be a sponge and learn everything that you can, because it's only going to make you more valuable, not just where you are, but if you're in a position where you are looking for a different job or going to be in a different work environment, all the education, all the experience you can muster, everything that you're talking about there, you're building up your resume, and that is important. This question's from John. says, I've been listening to your show for a few years. Can you or someone help with this issue? And only may be interested in the solution as well. Here's the background. I have a NAS device. On the NAS, we have a folder called Customer Files. In the Customer Files folder, we have subfolders for each letter of the alphabet, A, B, C, D, etc. So within the Customer Files, a folder we create and store customer client files for clients that start with A. The problem is, periodically, colleagues mistakenly drag and drop folders into other folders. Oh, I live this with one client. Example, they drag the B folder into the F folder. When this happens, it's a pain to try and search for the move folder and to move it back into place. Sometimes many gigs of info have to be moved back to the correct location. Is there a way to lock a NAS folder in place so it can't be moved, but allow for its subfolders to be moved? Hopefully I'm being clear. Thanks. And this is John from New York. It depends on the NAS and what security you're allowed. Now, from a Windows admin perspective, first off, you only want to be given permissions to users that should have full rights to be able to read and execute and change a file. When you give that permission, unfortunately, people can accidentally move it. I don't know of a way of stopping that. You can get to a point where you stop it, but then you're going to be really restricting. So the question is, can we allow a change and modify but not move? How does it know if you want to delete it or you're moving it? The device isn't intelligent enough to know that. I don't know if we have an answer here. I would like input from anybody out there if you have some ideas as to how we can possibly restrict access like that. But the first thing, John, what is the NAS device? Because mileage is going to vary here depending on the device, what level of permissions they allow for the folders. Unfortunately, there's an actual answer here that's going to prevent accidental moves, and it's just really education and pounding away. What you got to make sure is that there's nobody that should have read access that they have write access. There should be two levels of permission, actually three, an admin level. Then there should be people that are allowed to make changes and write. And then there should be a read only. And those people that don't have rights to be able to make changes should be in that read only group. I don't think I helped you here, but if we can get some feedback for recommendations for John, I will share them. It's a question from Carol. Hey, Mike, I'm hoping you can clarify something for me. Malwarebytes offers business license at the same rate as consumer for the first five computers, then offers a discounted rate as the number of licenses increase. As a consumer, I can purchase a one-time license forever. If I purchase a block of licenses for a business, it looks like a yearly rate. My client would have to pay every year. Is the business license different from the pro version? I don't think so. I don't see anything differentiating them. When you purchase for your clients, do you give them the business license and have them pay yearly? Thanks, Mike. And many, many thanks for your show and all you do. Kudos, Carol. Well, Carol, at the time when I was pushing and selling, well, I'm selling Malwarebytes still now, I had a couple clients, I believe, purchased. At one time, there was no business license, so it was the only license, and it was lifetime. And they have that. But I think now that they have this business license, They've gotten, I was going to say, not smarter, but a new revenue stream where they've changed their licensing model to say, hey, if you are in a corporation, you got to pay yearly. And if you're at home, you can get a lifetime. I think it's the honor system, and it's just a licensing issue. And I don't believe there's any functionality difference, but I do know the enterprise, there is a difference where the enterprise license for Malwarebytes can manage multiple clients and can manage the process of updating and making changes and setting changes for the individual desktops. So there it may look for a business license versus the consumer license if you want to do that. And it may force your hand if you want to manage it at an enterprise level. Unfortunately, I don't see a difference. For small companies, for very small companies, I'm probably going to continue to say use the consumer ones for as long as we can get away with it. But I don't know if that's correct or not. For anybody purchasing anything from Malwarebytes, you know, I have a link in the show notes and a big, big picture on the left-hand side of my website for Malwarebytes Pro. Click on that and make any purchase you want. And again, I'll get a commission for that. So they are an affiliate. I love Malwarebytes Pro, and I'm using it right now on my system. This is from Kevon. How do I know if a site is legit when Web of Trust does not have any information on it? That's a very good question. Is there a website to test websites? Unfortunately, I don't know. The best thing I can recommend is that you have your Malwarebytes Pro installed and updated. You have your antivirus, being Avast or Microsoft Security Essentials, always updated. And you have Web of Trust installed. And if you come across a website, at least you are in the best position that if something happens and it is a bad site, it'll be blocked. There's no magic. If Web of Trust doesn't have any recon or info on it, most likely there's not many places that will. So don't be afraid of it as long as you have all these other things in place. And I think you're going to be okay. All right. That's it for show 454. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed to the show. Thank you for using my Amazon link, amazon.micnation.net. Thank you for using my affiliate links and the affiliate links for Malwarebytes Pro and Fabs Auto Backup for Tech. Thank you so much, and I will see you all next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.